incredible. But
it's amazing what you can get used to, right?
Well, yeah, and what you have to get used to.
Can get used to. And it goes the other way. It's amazing what you become, like, entitled about.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're not entitled. You're a green candidate for Parkdale High Park.
I am.
Tell me a bit about yourself.
Sure. So Helena Zaluki is my
name. That's your name.
That is my name. And so I grew up in Etobicoke, and now I live in the Junction area in, I guess, the north part of this riding. I've been there for about 5 years. I love it. I feel very, very privileged and very, just grateful to be living in such a neighborhood. Every time I say I live in Junction, people are like, wow, that's such a cool neighborhood.
And it is cool. Totally it is. Used to be uncool because it was trains.
Yeah.
It was dry. Mm-hmm. Up until the 90s, right?
Exactly.
There were no bars.
Yeah.
So there was no street life.
Yeah.
And there was just slaughterhouses.
Exactly.
As far as the eye could see.
And things have changed.
Have they ever?
Yeah.
So quickly. Now it's the cool neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it's still sort of inexpensive.
Yeah, but it's getting there. And I think that's what we're hearing a lot. You know, not even, I'm not meaning to jump right into politics.
No,
but
get in there.
But but yeah, it's like many neighborhoods in Toronto, it's becoming really expensive to live here. So I live in a rental space up in the attic of a house, and I do feel it's my home. So I'm always dreading that moment, if it ever happens, I hope it doesn't, where my landlord comes to us and says, you know, my cousin needs to move in, or whatever family member, right? Because that's one of those stipulations that landlords take advantage of. And we would all be dislocated, you know, from what we really do feel to be our home. So anyways, I didn't mean to avoid the question, what about me? But so that's a big part of me. A big part of me is where I live. But I also spent a good number of years abroad. And I think that gave me perspective. And, we just had a really quick conversation, I guess, before this started about, you know, India. I spent a little bit of time in India.
You helping people there?
Well, you know, that whole idea of helping people, honestly, I feel like in my travels, it's helped me, if anything, right?
God, I just come off like such a dick right off the
top. No, it's
true. You know what I meant. Like, that was shorthand for, I should have said, were you hanging out on beaches, smoking weed and surfing? Were you
on
vacation?
Not exactly.
No,
so,
you were working.
I was working. I was in India for a few different occasions. One time I was just traveling, so I'm not going to deny that. It was an amazing experience just getting to know the country from top to bottom.
But you were doing yoga.
But then I spent 2 months there on a different occasion studying yoga. So I'm a yoga practitioner and teacher.
Okay, so you're a green candidate. You do yoga every day?
Every day.
Probably on a sliding scale. You don't charge people very much?
So I practice every day.
Oh, you practice every day.
Ashtanga yoga. Yeah. I less teaching now because of my other endeavors. So I started a small business, which takes up a lot of time.
Are you a vegetarian?
You know what? Everyone thinks I am.
I don't think you are. I just think just by you being so close to me, I'm ashamed of myself.
No, absolutely.
I quickly like to turn things into all about me.
No, and you know what? I tried it. I am dairy free. I tried to go vegan for a year, and I hate to say, but I got really sick. And my philosophy on health and diet is, you have to know your own body. You have to identify what foods are good for you and what foods are not good for you. And I think it's really person specific. So I spent a lot of time kind of investigating that and conducting many experiments on my own body, and I figured out that I do need a little bit of meat.
Do you
but
feel
I do,
a little bit bad about it sometimes?
You know what? Yes and no. I think in the sense that, first of all, I think part of, you know, being green and what creates a little bit of a repellent dynamic with people that try to live, I guess, this green life is that there's this idea that, you know, we're better. We're better than others. And
right.
I'm not. I eat meat. Unfortunately, you know, I need to eat meat. I try to buy sustainably raised meat. I try to limit
it. You have a not-for-profit, your own business. You spend all your time not helping people, but service is important to you.
It is.
You're not out there for profit. You can't afford the the grass-fed cow. I can't.
You know what, though? I feel like it's a matter of prioritizing what's important for a person. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I don't go out much. Not that there's anything wrong with going out, but I don't know that I need to spend all my income on, you know, the frivolities. I hate shopping, and I actually just hate shopping. I'm not even doing that for any conscientious...
For clothes or anything?
For mostly anything, but largely clothes. I think it's
for some reason
you step into a mall, and it's this amazing way of convincing you that you have nothing. You know, you look down and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so out of step with with what's in. So I just don't go to malls. I buy everything secondhand, and I'm not even doing that. I mean, it's funny. I'm glad you kind of mentioned this idea of, like, you know, you're environmentalist and can you afford it? But actually, I can't afford not to be. So I bike everywhere.
I
don't have a car, but I bike everywhere. Not only because I love it. I love cycling, and I it's a great way to travel the city and taking different routes. And I find it's my breathing space. It's my breathing space between meetings, between interviews, whatever it is I'm doing. But also, it's cheaper. I'm not paying, you know, $3 every time I need to go somewhere one way. And it's unfortunate that our transit system is so.
It's
expensive, and it's, you know, it seems like the prices keep rising. So I think being green, if you can kind of drill it down to, like, what's important to you, and for me, it's about living a healthy life. And I, you know, the Greens talk about prevention. So a lot, if not all of these kind of positions that the Green Party takes really resonate with me, because that's just how I live. I try to stay healthy, as opposed to just, you know, eventually having to treat illness with a whole bunch of medications that are going to give me a whole bunch of side effects.
Yeah, I never had the perspective, or my perspective changed last year when I gave myself a challenge to teach myself about investing. And then, because I was thinking, like, we're not planning for our future, my wife and I. So I read some books on that, which led to me realizing I'm not putting enough away, which led to me learning about budgeting, which, all this to say that I, like, woke up a little bit and was like, oh, I don't need to. And my wife and I had this conversation of, like, we don't need to go to a fancy restaurant ever again in our lives, and we'll be okay. It's this dumb, and right. If people are anything like me, it's sort of a slow, and then the light goes
and
on,
the
and you
moment.
Go, oh, fuck, I'm sure. So, why didn't this occur to me earlier?
Yeah, and I think once in a while, like, if I ever do have the means, once in a while, it's nice to treat yourself, but I think it's a question of, what does treating yourself mean? And I think it's kind of, we've gotten really caught up in this keeping up with the Joneses. And you know what? Maybe what Jones has is not so great.
Well,
maybe
everybody has problems. That's what I like to remind myself. Yeah. After reading part of Shannon Lee Simmons' book, Worry Free Money, she's on Metro Morning all the time talking about money.
Mm-hmm.
She talks about keeping up with the Joneses. Isn't this idea on TV? It's not that remote. It's the people in your own neighborhood.
Mm.
And you want to keep up with them because they're your friends.
Mm.
So she says, hang out with people that are more like you. And also know that even though they have stuff over there, they also have debt.
Yeah.
Everybody has debt. Everybody has problems. Nobody tweets, like, arguments with their partners.
Yeah. I think that's why Facebook. I think there's this kind of love-hate relationship with Facebook, because we all go on there and look at how perfect everyone else's lives look. And then we think, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Nobody sends
photos of their credit card statement.
Exactly.
Of their outstanding balance.
Or that really bad argument where you're walking away going, oh my gosh, did that just happen?
Yeah. It's over. It's all over. This is over. I know. I feel like I haven't been on Facebook for 8 years. And I always brag about that, because I feel like it too is just a shift in perspective.
Mm.
And if people were actually to try it, to go on that diet, they would love, because I am so much happier now that I'm off of Facebook.
Yeah.
Twitter took a little longer to get off of, because it's not so insidious somehow.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of people have good reasons to stay on that stuff, but I've been much happier since. I feel like if I were to go back on social media, I would start up a Twitter handle. Is that how you, what you call it? Where it's like something
don't
like...
Don't ask me.
like tweet your problems. Right. And I would just like take a photo of me when I wake up every night at 3:30 in the morning for some reason.
Yeah. And you know what? I think, you know, joking aside, I think actually it's really important for us to start to share those stories.
Yeah.
Because, you know, mental health, it's such a pervasive challenge that affects us all, whether it's you personally or someone you know. And I'm really raw from that at this moment in time. Actually, today found out that a colleague of mine, you know, passed away. Took his own life as a result of mental health. And I think a big part of that is the sense of not belonging, a sense of disconnection.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't talk about it. We it's slowly coming up. Mental health now is slowly being talked about, but I think, you know, using these different channels to start to have a little bit more honest conversations, and it's really hard, right? It's really hard to come out and
I'll do it. I can do it. Maybe I should call it Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Maybe you should.
Or Not Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Yeah. Or
and I could send photos of my basement, my unfinished, terrifying, or those bathrooms.
Toilets, exactly.
The transfouting toilets in my office.
Exactly. So I think that's, you know, and at CSI, I mentioned I'm at the Center for Social Innovation. Part of what they do also is these stories we don't tell. And I think it is about those stories we don't tell. And I think those stories are tremendously inspirational as well and motivational because, you know...
Because you're not alone.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're so dumb. We're like, oh my God, we're surprised that we're not the only ones having these problems. We're so like self-centered.
Yeah. And I find one of the best things I've noticed, and it's not even intentional, when I'm going through something... I notice if I happen to talk to other people, because usually my inclination is just to crawl under my rock, you know, confine myself in, you know, sink deeper into that place of isolation. But I do end up having conversations with people that I care about, and I'm like, wow, I'm so sorry you're going through that. And it takes me right out of my space. Not that my space is not important. It's important to take care of yourself. But you realize that compassion, it's like a warm blanket to both of you, right?
No, we're wired up to care about others.
Yeah, and it makes you feel better.
It is. It does. It's totally, the way I was raised is not, the WASPy way is not the way. Bury your feelings down, cover them in gin.
Especially as a man.
It's not the way. Especially as a man. Yeah. We're terrible at it.
Yeah.
So I'm on a personal mission of oversharing with everybody, close friends, strangers. That gets me
now no one wants to talk to you.
There is that part of it where I say too much. And it's, I don't know, half of the time I say too much in the hopes of getting a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want people to go, I feel comfortable around you, to say, yeah, me too.
For sure. Yeah. My sister's always been really good at that. So I have a twin sister.
Oh, really?
And of course, you know, people always, you know, which one are you?
Right.
So I'm not even going to share which one I am, but let's say she's the very friendly, and she's always been really good at making people feel comfortable. And I think that's part of, because she's just open. She's just an open spirit, and you can feel it the moment you're around her. She doesn't even have to open her mouth. And I think we realize when we can, and again, it's really hard because, you know, as I said, I'm perhaps a little bit of the opposite. When I force myself into that a little bit more, it just feels so much better.
Yeah,
you know?
It does. Just have you ever overdone it? Like me. I'm looking for corroboration here. Tell us about the time you stuck your foot in your mouth.
You know,
please.
What? Well, I think this whole candidacy thing has been a really interesting experience.
Come on, you
for
must
me.
Have said something in public that
sense,
you went, ugh.
You know, I did, but actually it ended up being really well received. So I hate to leave
what
you hanging. I had my parents in the audience. Yeah. Let me just set it up for you. And the question was, is there anything, it was kind of one of those off-the-cuff questions, is what was the most difficult challenge in your life? And I think I was the first one to have to answer, so I didn't even have time to think about it. And so, again, my parents are sitting there, and I said, the most difficult thing I've ever had to experience was coming home from being abroad. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how do I dig myself out of this one? And my whole idea there, what I was trying to share and what I think I finally successfully managed to express, was that it was this idea of I was pursuing this international career and humanitarian international work. It was, the whole thing seemed just very exciting for me, and you know, a life of adventure, I guess that's what I was seeking. But then I after a few years in that work, and it was really amazing and rewarding, but I, you know, I happened to come across and work a little bit more in the climate change issue. I attended three of the international conferences, the COPs, Conference of the Parties, and one of the last conferences, I had a conversation with this Canadian guy, and he started sharing with me what's going on back in Canada. I'm like, oh no, I felt it. I felt it kind of emerge from the depths of my soul. Mm-hmm. I have to go home.
Yeah.
You know, I have to go home. And because what I was working on a lot was on migration issues. So people largely displaced as a result of environmental degradation, and uh-huh. climate change is a big part of that. And so helping these people on that side of things. But then I realized, you know what? In Canada, we are such, we're such big contributors to the problem.
Yeah.
That I wanted to be part of that solution. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean
to. So you had to change career expectations.
Yeah, I did. I decided to change my path, and I came home, and I was totally.
Where were you living?
Displaced here. At that time,
yeah.
I studied in, I was first in Ukraine, and then I, in Brussels, where I studied for migration studies for my master's degree. And then I was in, Switzerland, Geneva. Talk
Those
about
all
expensive,
sound fun.
Talk about expensive
oh, really?
Cities though. Yeah. Yeah, as an intern.
Does Shania still live there? Or has she come home?
I don't know her actually.
Shania Twain. She pronounces it Shania, but that's bullshit. It's Shania. It's
is
Tanya
she in
with
Geneva?
A sh-
yeah.
Yeah, she's
I
there.
Didn't,
so
I
is
come
Tina Turner.
Her. Really?
Yeah, because it's a tax haven
well,
there.
Well, there you go.
Or
yeah.
Some,
and it's a beautiful place to
is
live.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very expensive, but beautiful.
Okay, so you came home and you were displaced.
So I
Why?
Came totally displaced. Well, my work didn't quite translate into the local
oh.
context. You know, I sent off at least 100 applications to a variety of organizations, and it just wasn't getting me anywhere. And I quickly realized it's kind of more of who you know these days.
Yeah.
So that's part of why I started my own organization. Part of the story, but you know.
And how's that going?
It's going well.
Is it?
Yeah,
that's
it is.
Good.
Yeah, I'd say you know starting this group. So it's a not-for-profit sustainability consulting group, mm-hmm. which is kind of this weird mix because often, you know, it's for-profit. We are a co-op, so we organize ourselves as much as we can in a democratic fashion.
That sounds annoying.
It's hard.
Don't
sometimes.
You need a boss sometimes? Someone just to
well,
go,
that's
yeah,
why,
that's a great
why,
idea.
No, but I added a little caveat there. I don't know, maybe you missed it. I said, as much as you can.
Oh, okay. So you're still the boss.
No, I would hope that my colleagues wouldn't say that. Meaning when we work on projects, we do have project leads. So we have, you know, the project manager, because you kind of do need someone to be accountable for what's going on. But we all contribute to how decisions are made, you know, the outcome of the project. And in that sense, I find it's like a more adult way of functioning because, and I don't know about you, but I'm not very good with, you know, hierarchies. I especially when management is not, well, trained to be managed.
Right. Right.
So maybe I've had one too many bad experiences in those scenarios.
But that's government, isn't it?
No.
It
I don't
have
think
to
so
be
at
that
all.
Way.
Actually,
but you'd be
I would
the MPP. You'd
I
be
would,
in the top spot if you
yeah,
won.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm so glad you said that because I would strongly dispute that understanding of what government is. government is your representative, is your voice. In fact, they're in, you can almost see it, they're like the bottom of the rung, because they're really there to represent what you want. It's not what I want. It's what best...
Okay, sure, but I have an agent. I'm an actor. I have an agent. They're supposed to be working for me. They're still the gatekeeper. They still have more power than I do. Same with the casting director. Yeah. All these people are there to serve the actor.
Yeah.
But it's not really the case. They're in there, just like you would be in there.
I think that that happens so that that decision-making... gets transferred to the representative when there is lack of transparency. When you, as the Democratic citizen voter, don't really understand what's going on. And then I can make all sorts of decisions that are not in your best interest.
Right. And how do you get people, like, sure, Green Party, Green people are engaged. They're activists by nature.
You know what? If you went and looked at the candidates and you paid attention to our different biographies, we are from all walks of life.
Sure, but the people that you would represent, the people that show up at rallies and stuff like that, they're activists. They're engaged. Other parties, the people are not, and they vote by habit or vote by family or vote by their riding. So I think you just have a more engaged... dynamic between your supporters and you, don't you? So that would make sense. They would be telling you.
Yeah, I would think so. So
other candidates would be like, okay, we get, like, I went to a political thingy the other day. I won't mention whose. The people that were showing up, a lot of them were not the right people to be informing. It was not representative.
Exactly.
There were some zealots. Yeah. There were some people that had a lot of time on their hands. There were some people with weird pants. Like, it was just a weird... Are you hearing from the right people?
You know, I don't know if I could say there are right people or
I knew
wrong
you would,
people.
Just I because knew you would say that.
Okay, the way it should work, as far as I understand, is if I get elected, I am here to represent the people who live in our riding. And it's people from all walks of life. And of course, you can see the challenge right there. Yeah. Everyone's got a different ask, a different opinion. A
lot of pro-lifers in our right.
There are many different perspectives.
There's a big statue of the Pope.
And as there should be. And that's actually where I think the Greens, you know, when I'm at debates, kind of there's two things I've landed on. If I could say these two things, then mission accomplished. One is, yes, we're about environment, and this is why environment is important. Because, you know, it's our home, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, if you want to hear that spiel, I'm happy to get into it. But the second piece I say is that the Greens do politics differently. We're about collaboration. So I would never want to eliminate or, I don't know if you caught the leaders' debate the other day, it's a gong show. It's such a circus. Why, you know, our whole system is so adversarial that you would never run a business, you would never run a family. You know that systems don't work if people are just constantly trying to disprove each other, right? So we need to allow all those voices to be heard. So we're collaborative, we look for innovative solutions, and we're trying to be honest, right?
Doesn't that take longer? Isn't that more expensive, collaboration? It's really hard.
You know what? I would say it's more expensive to constantly being flipping people's decisions, not because they're bad, but because they're not yours, right? Every 4 years, we need to get rid of, you know, obviously we've had liberals for 15 years, so that argument doesn't stand. But right now, I think we're in a situation that, you know, anyone but liberal, right? And then we look at the other options and, you know, I think NDP has a really great platform, but how are you going to pay for it? And where's the environment? You look at conservatives, that's just scary in terms of what Ford, you know, stands for. I think the
scariest part of that debate on Sunday was him manufacturing smiles. That's a terrifying
and,
face.
And, you know, I feel bad. I honestly feel bad for conservative voters out there, my father being one of them, who are looking at this person and going, where did you come from?
Where did Patrick Brown go? They are just wishing Patrick Brown was back.
Or
he
someone else.
He was such a good candidate.
Or someone else.
Right?
But
who would you have rather had seen? Or your dad? Mulroney? Do you want to see that name again?
I think he would have preferred that. I think so.
I think a lot of them would have.
I think any of them, although that other female candidate looked also a little bit scary.
Yeah, who's that? Christine Elliott? Is that right?
No, the other one.
Oh, I didn't see that.
But I don't mean to be rude. People aren't. I'm sure Doug Ford is a great.
You don't have to say that here. You don't have to apologize
great,
for him.
And a great.
He's never
friend.
Said one nice thing about you. Or me.
But I don't. I think some people. I think he's not poised for the position that he's vying for.
No. Okay. So you have to collaborate. You would do that.
Yeah. And I think that's why our voting system sucks. That's why we really need a system that's both more representative and would allow for collaboration, like the proportional representation.
So you would support that because then the Greens would have a seat.
Well, we would, right? Actually.
Okay, explain proportional representation.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
go into great detail, but I will say...
No, I don't need it. It just gets boring. Yeah, I need the thin top.
Exactly. The high level is that you are representing voters based on the proportion of votes. So let's drill it down to really simple...
Thank you. Simple. That's what I need.
Simple math, because I'm also not very good at math. That if the Greens, we got 5% of the vote in our last elections, we would have 5% of the seats. Therefore,
right.
Whoever voted Green would have their voice heard. Now, with our first past the post system, there are no Greens. So everyone who feels strongly and aligned to what we're saying, not to mention, I think, the whole number of people that would have voted Green had we not had this strategic voting, you know, chaos... we would allow people to vote with their hearts, to vote with their conscience. You know, Mike Schreiner, our leader, would say, you know, to not hold their nose when they go to vote. And not, you know, people don't vote anymore. I think we had less than 50% of people going to vote because I think people feel so disillusioned, so disenfranchised by politics and feeling like they just aren't represented.
And I think that's because people don't remember. Was there proportional representation at one point? And we went to first past the post?
Yeah, I don't think so. I do know that we had a referendum. But as far as I know, and I was at a country at that time, that it really wasn't, people weren't well informed about what it meant. And
that's
and
the
how
other thing. The way they write referendum questions is asked backwards.
So, and I think, it comes back to how... engaged, how informed are...
People used to be engaged more. This is what I hear. Mm-hmm. There was more voter turnout. Now there isn't. Why isn't there?
Well, I think that's part of it. Honestly, if I wasn't, running for this position, I don't know how much I would be paying attention to it because there's so much noise out there.
Yeah,
and so
think
much
it's
bickering.
That. I think it's talking points.
Yeah.
I think they're so boring.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Dougie has made some noise because he at least talks like a normal human being. Mm. He's playing a normal human being right now, whereas Kathleen Wynne is so boring. And it's just, I did this, this is one another accomplishment of my own. And it's slow. And it's, at least that's what turns me off.
Yeah.
Andrea Horvath, when there was that membership scandal about Doug a few days last week. And she just came out and, like, there was no teeth to her response. Mm. I wanted somebody to jump on that guy and flick his ear. And, like, that's not the Green style. Can you guys... take some headlines when you're so collaborative positive.
I really wish that we had Mike at the debates the other night because
you like him.
You know
he's
what?
He's a good speaker.
It's not even just being a good speaker because you see that it's coming straight from his heart and from his brain.
Right.
The two things combined, which makes for sound, reasonable, compassionate policy that just makes sense. And that's why I'm running. Honestly, like, this is not an easy thing to do. It takes a lot of time. You know, it's nerve-wracking. You're up there. You're given questions like you know that you don't know how you're going to answer in 2 seconds. But I decide to run because the Greens really stand for what I believe in, what I think is the absolute necessary direction that we need to be heading in. And I'll say it, like, I feel we are in this moment of great uncertainty, and we have these two roads. I honestly, I'm not just saying this to sound like poetic, that we have these two roads ahead of us, two different directions, and one is down that Ford Trump road, and the other one is doing things better. Doing mm-hmm. and not only, it's that we see all of the systems kind of falling apart, you know, climate change and income divides and just, and mental health, like people are falling apart. Our people, our planet, things are kind of just, you know, falling apart at the seams. But I think out of that, honestly, I am optimistic and motivated by that, because I think out of that, the rubble, we can come up with something so much better. You know, we started talking about our consumerism ways and how we've just become consumers, right? And that I think when we start to move in that other direction, we come back to our humanity, you know, to what matters. And
there's all politicians talk about coming back or a return to. Mm. I would argue that no one can remember a time that was better. Mm. Is that what you're talking about? I mean, it's never been better than now for women, for children, for people of color, for minorities.
You know, so let's talk about women. I think that's a good example.
What is this good place that we want to return to?
I think that's a good example of what's happening, you know, with the Me Too movement and women now coming out and sharing their stories. And it's happening in all sectors, right? No matter what you're doing in life, you've probably experienced some form of discrimination, and not even to mention racial discrimination, because all of that has just been taking place for far too long. That yes, we are in a better place, moving, you know, towards, you know, women now can vote. Yay, we're considered people. That's a big accomplishment. But I think we've gotten lost in a variety of different ways, and I think consumerism is part of that, and not to say that buying things is bad because it keeps our economy moving, but that we've lost a sense of priority and a sense of connection with each other. So, mm-hmm.
Okay, so maybe the innocence of the 70s were missing. The earth wasn't burning up back then. We've got to take care
of
that.
Can I take us further back? Here, I'm gonna dig myself
further than
out of
the 70s.
No, I am. I'm gonna take us further back.
What happened before the 70s?
I'm gonna take us into, I think what I always reflect on when I feel, you know, what might be the right way, and not that I know enough about Indigenous culture and community. I wouldn't even pretend to be the expert, but from what I do know, the little that I do know, I feel there's such great wisdom in the Indigenous way of thinking and being. And that is take what you need, live a sustainable life, seventh generation thinking that what we do today must have that positive, sustainable effect on seven generations down the line. That, you know, that idea that we are connected. And it's so simple, and science is here to prove it. I'm not trying to talk fluff, that, you know, when we talk about environment, I am gonna talk about environment then. There's this crazy false dichotomy we've created that there's this environment and trees out there, and then there are people. So which do you care about? Do you care about people? Do you care about the environment? Which is crazy.
No, you can feel it. Everybody can feel it. Everybody can feel it. All you have to do is get in your car on the Gardiner Expressway and try and head west at any time after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And you can feel it. You can feel the heat.
Yep.
And you can breathe the air,
exactly.
And it feels worse than it did in the morning.
Exactly.
It's totally there. You go down to any beach on the lake shore in West Toronto,
yeah.
And there's as much microplastics as there is sand.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm, again...
And if we don't change that, then everything else, nothing else matters.
Thank you. Thank you for supporting that. And it's not even something you could really argue with. I'd honestly, even with Doug Ford sitting right here next to us, I would find it surprising that he could say anything to counter this idea that our environment is / our home.
He would call you his friend, right?
he probably would.
His head is probably twice as big as yours. And I'm not saying yours is small.
It probably
he can
is.
Eat you for breakfast.
So sorry, I just want to dig myself finally out of that hole that I think I was heading in. In terms of the wrong direction, those are the types of things... No tappy. Those are the types of things that I'm referring to. This idea that we are not the environment, that we are not part of nature, that we are disconnected, that we don't need to think about the future, that it just matters about how much money you're making today. No, these things are, it's I think deeply been ingrained in us, and I think we just need to wake up a bit.
Okay, let's talk about strategic voting.
Yeah.
Because you brought it up earlier, and for the first time in forever, the NDP is tied with the Tories right now. Doesn't it make sense for everybody to put their vote behind the NDP so at least we don't have Doug Ford in charge?
Are you talking about specifically in our riding in terms of the polls?
I'm talking about voting for...
Yeah, but the polls that you're referring to.
I'm talking about voting. I'm talking about people. Yeah. People vote for the leader of the party. They don't vote for the person in their riding.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to our voting system.
Okay, the system is the system.
Yeah, exactly. So
you got to choose Andrea Horvath or Doug Ford. That's really what it's come down to, hasn't it?
Right, but it hasn't come down to that, because if for those that understand technically how our voting system works, it's a matter of who's going to win in your own riding. And so if we were having this conversation and I was running in Etobicoke, I would find that a much more difficult question to answer. But I'm running in Parc des Halles Park, which you could say, if you're not a Ford supporter, is a safe riding. It's never gone conservative, or at least let's hope no one writes you and says, actually, it was conservative.
It did once. So ages ago. You're right. I see what you're saying.
Long, long time ago.
This is either going to be Liberal or NDP.
Either Liberal or NDP. So it is one of those places that people actually can vote based on the party they believe in.
I'm not gonna give a vote to the PCs by voting for you.
Not here.
No. What if we lived in Etobicoke, where you grew up?
So in and I feel sorry for the Green member there. It's not to say don't vote Green. It's to say, and I'm going to echo what Mike says, is that if you vote for a party that you don't believe in, then you're going to get the party you don't believe in, right? So vote out of hope for what you want. Not out of fear for
hope
what you
dangerous.
Don't want.
Hope is dangerous. Hope is filled with fear and want.
Well, look at what we keep on getting. So, for example, I'll give you a good example.
Keep on getting the
at
NDP.
At the federal level, we actually do. Here, the last number of elections, we've had NDP candidates, MPPs.
Right. Okay. But I mean, like, with any sway. Like, the opposition. Yeah. We want the NDP to at least be the official opposition, don't we? We don't want splitting of votes on the left.
I think it's important for people to pay attention to what the parties are saying, because I'm going to bring in another factor here, actually two factors. One thing that people don't know is that every vote counts for around $2.50 a year. So that's $10 in 4 years that you're helping to fund the party that you vote for. So
is
that is
campaign contributions.
It's per funding voting.
What does that mean?
Per vote funding that came in the last elections. Uh-huh. So that means that your vote counts for $10 in the 4 years. So you're helping to fund the party that you vote for.
Oh, I see. The more votes a party gets, the more money they get from elections.
Exactly.
Ontario.
Exactly.
Right.
So just
and
know
so that's
that.
Why when I give mm-hmm. money to a candidate, mm-hmm. when I donate to a campaign
exactly.
or a party, I get a tax rebate. And it's coming from... It's those and, per vote funds?
So the tax rebate is part of that, but yes, the money is allocated towards the party. Any party that gets more than 2% of the vote.
Okay.
So just, first of all, that's something people don't know, and they should recognize that you are actually contributing to the growing and the expansion of that party. So if you vote for whoever and you don't really believe in them, just know that you're actually helping to grow that party versus the party that you do believe in. So you're basically sinking the party you do believe in that hole, right? And so that's one thing that people don't think about. And this is important as well. When you vote, you're sending a strong message to all parties about what policies you believe in, what you believe in. If you vote Green, you're saying, I believe that climate change exists. I believe we should be placing environmental protection as a priority. I believe in a collaborative approach. I believe that we need to be honest about how we're going to pay for things. I believe that we need to take an innovative approach and move towards 21st century green jobs and ensure people are living in, you know, affordable housing, basic income guarantee, and that we have a way, again, of paying for that. So you are sending that very strong message that these are the things I believe in. And in fact, they have been picked up by other parties. Even though we're not in power, those policies have been looked at and gone, you know what, that actually kind of makes sense. And we're happy to have parties steal those policies because we just want to see Ontario be a better place to live for all of us. So, and you know, something else that people don't really know about is that we have had, as a result of HOPE, Jason, as a result of HOPE, we've had MPPs or MLAs, whatever they're called, voted in New Brunswick, in PEI, in BC, at the federal level, and they've all made a tremendous difference. If you're following Kinder Morgan and what's happening in BC, it's because of the green there that they're holding strong on keeping that pipeline from being built. And for those of us that, again, care about climate change and local populations, that's a big deal.
I was reading the Green Platform, and it, as I mentioned before, I think boredom and listening to politics is what turns a lot of people off of it. It's so good to have people that are passionate about it go for it, especially when you're running on a lot of hope. Hmm. It's so good that people are actually into that because it's certainly not the money.
No, it isn't.
The platform makes a lot of sense. There were a couple things that I just don't understand.
Yeah.
So if I could ask you about that. First of all, shutting down the nuclear power plant in Pickering.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It should have been shut down this year, right?
So it's,
but they retrofitted it for another.
Well, so here's the deal. The license expires in August 2018.
Oh, the license.
So that would, if we renew it, it would be the second renewal. It's already 47 years old.
Right.
This thing should have been shut down a long time ago.
But they spent millions of dollars fixing it, they said.
Well, and that's the anticipation. Millions, so tremendous amounts of money have already gone into keeping it alive, mm-hmm. and now even more investment. So if we continue to fund nuclear, it would end, and if we, and that's Pickering and Darlington, it would triple the cost. So 180% growth in the cost of energy.
Energy costs. And these are called, this is called hydro?
So this, yeah, this is our, your
that's
electricity.
That's included in, electricity is called
bill.
Hydro.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. In BC it's called hydro because it's actually hydro.
Yeah, yeah.
Here it's a mix.
And here, I'll confuse it even further. So we have, first of all, we're with nuclear, we are, especially Pickering, we're creating actually too much energy that it's sometimes being, we have to pay the United States to take it from us.
Why can't we sell it?
Because the times, sometimes when we create too much, they don't even need it.
Oh.
So we're actually paying them to take energy off our grid. So,
weird.
So because with nuclear, it's not an easy thing to shut down. You're just going to keep creating, you know, as much energy as it creates. And sometimes you're at a surplus and it creates problems. So first of all, it's not malleable, right, to our needs.
Mm-hmm.
It's way more expensive, as I said, three times more expensive. So 16.5 kilowatts versus, and here's where I'm going to confuse you even more, versus 5 cents a kilowatt hour from water power, which sometimes is called hydroelectricity, but let's call it water power from Quebec at one-third the cost.
So we're going to buy hydroelectricity from Quebec at one-third the
cost.
Well,
that's what the Green Party is supporting. We're also supporting a variety of different other options, like renewable energy. The price keeps going down. If you know anything about how energy is created, I'm, you know, given the work I do, I'm now wrapping my head around it. We have energy everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Energy is essentially from the sun. Every form of energy is from the sun, except for nuclear, in fact. So you've got wind power, you've got water power, you've got solar power, all of these forms of energy that you can start to capture if we had the political will. And I will say, period, because we've got the technical know-how. No tapping. We've got the technical know-how. You know, for example, hydro, water power from Quebec, it's in place. So I know hydro can also be problematic. But the power station's already been built. It's you know, it's already, Quebec has already made it known that it's available to us. And so there just really is no reason why we wouldn't move in that direction other than politics, other than, you know, this, the nuclear lobby, other than, I'm going to put it out there, unions. Unions have a place in this world, and I think it's super important for protecting workers' rights. But when that is at odds with what's best in the public interest, I think we need to be concerned about that, and we need to make sure that our policies are for the public at large and not for, you know, buying the next election.
Helena, is there anything else you want to talk about? We've come to the end.
We have.
Did I miss anything?
No, I think we touched on a lot of the important issues, and it's unfortunate we don't have other people in this room to ask those important questions. But
no, I don't think it's unfortunate that there aren't other people. This show with an audience, that would be
interesting.
That would be interesting.
But thank you for your candor, and it was lovely speaking with you, and maybe some other time when I'm elected.
Great, I love it. Nice to meet you.
Cheers.